Welcome everybody to the Reflex Blue Show. I am your host Donovan Beery, and today I am still calling from the Atlanta How Design Live Conference. We have Terry Trespecio. Terry, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
What are you now? What are you speaking about while you're here?
I actually just did my talk. It was in the early part of the day here, in the first day of the conference. It was called "How to Build Your Personal Brand on the Job." That was the idea.
Well, first off, congratulations on getting the ideal speaking time so you can actually enjoy the conference.
Oh, my God, yes. Now I don't have to worry about anything. Yes.
That is like I know when people talk, like when you say, oh, I'm the closing keynote, you're like, oh, I'm sorry.
That's terrible, right?
You're going to just sit in your hotel room every night and keep tweaking
thinking
something.
About it,
really,
yes.
Really not changing anything, but just ruining your whole trip.
Exactly.
So you're done.
I'm done. I'm done, except we have another event coming up. I'll tell you about that in a minute.
Okay, so I'm on the job, and I have to build my brand while on the job. How do I do this? Like, what's the takeaway from your talk?
Well, the key takeaway is this. Everyone already has a brand. They're just not actually leveraging it in any intentional or focused way. And when we think about branding, we tend to think of it as, oh, that's for commercial products and entrepreneurs and people who are, like, out on their own kind of thing. We don't think of it as inside the job. And I say that building your own personal brand is your job through your whole life, and it's the most valuable thing you can invest in, because your jobs will change, your skills will change and improve and expand, but who you are
well,
and
we
how
so.
You do. Well, we hope. But the key to who
don't,
you are as a brand is
don't be thinking
I've
grown at all.
No?
Don't be thinking, yeah, I might know less than I knew when I graduated.
Well, maybe you're more open-minded.
So maybe even more closed-minded. But I do agree that anytime you're dealing with the service industry, people don't necessarily work with companies, they work with people. And so you are right. Like, you are the brand.
Oh, you are it. And that's why companies care about this and should care more, because every person in their company is a representative of their brand.
So is there a pushback by certain companies where they're like, we don't want, like, no,
yes.
we want to be the, I'm assuming larger agencies, like, we want people to come to our agency. If they even see your name on our website, then they think.
Yes, but you're looking at it externally. I'm not talking about whether the world sees Donovan or sees the company. I'm talking about building your brand in order to grow inside of your business, so people inside know who you are and know why you're worth keeping, worth promoting, worth paying attention to.
Okay, because there's only like two of us in my office, so the other person knows I exist because
that's great.
I sit right next. I'm pretty good at letting them know.
So this is your. But the thing is, you have your own business, so you do have to represent your brand to the public. But someone who works inside it as an in-house creative that develops design for the larger brand, they also have to know what makes them special out of their design group as well.
Yeah, because I don't even know if I know the person's name.
So well, that would be something for you to work on.
So they need to convey this and build their brand to me. And
yes,
well,
if you're paying them, yes, they absolutely should.
Okay, well, I'd probably just look at the check, and maybe then I can figure out who it is.
Yes, that would be smart.
No, I'm just kidding. Dylan's great. He's with us right now. He's been with us since September, and he's wonderful. So, what's the secret to building this brand when you're in a large company like this?
The secret is to make sure that you are making a point of becoming the most valuable resource and solving problems that you're exceptionally good at solving, making sure you're the person that solves those problems. I don't mean you have to, like, unclog the toilet if that's not your thing to do. I'm saying that there are certain problems that arise, business issues that arise in anywhere, that you're like, oh, that's my thing. Become the expert in that thing. You still have to create your signature work inside of a company. You're not a cog.
Right.
The cogs are not going to be kept for long. They'll be replaced, forgotten. But if you can be someone who does something memorable that matters, and the example I give is me, because I was an editor at a magazine of several editors at a company that was at a magazine that was purchased by Martha Stewart. And I knew I had to make sure that I mattered individually, because editors are a dime a dozen.
Okay.
And so what happened was Martha Stewart bought it, helped, you know, operated the magazine. And at one point she decided to move the magazine to New York. And she said, everyone can apply for their jobs if they want to come. They're not taking editors to New York. That's like taking sand to the beach. Doesn't make any sense.
Oh, sure.
But am I at that point, by the time she got to that point where she wanted to, and she and her team wanted to bring the magazine to New York, we were in Boston at the time.
So it's not a huge move. It's not like
it's a big move. Any move to New York City is a big to me. It's a huge jump.
I'm just saying, but I mean it's not like you're moving cross country.
Well, you're leaving your job. A lot of those people didn't want to move. They had families in the suburbs of Boston, whatever. I, on the other hand, here's the piece of advice I give.
I just hear moving to New York, and I'm from Omaha, so moving to New York is a gigantic move.
Yeah, Boston, New York, not as big, right?
Yeah.
But here's the point. I, at that point, had been hosting a radio show for the brand. Why? Because no one else wanted to do it. I was doing TV segments for the brand. Why? Because people weren't really crazy about doing it. I made sure I was the one solving the problems.
Yeah, TV and radio are dying. Magazines are forever.
Yeah, right.
That's a good move on your part.
I made sure that I was doing more than just my job. I went over and above. Some of it I wasn't compensated for. Why? Because when it came to moving people to New York, they moved one, me. They fired everybody else.
Oh, wow.
And so it mattered that I had diversified and made myself a commodity, a rare commodity in that brand. That's how I got to keep my job. No one else did.
Wow.
That's the value of a brand.
And I assume that not only, even if you didn't want to keep that job, it would have made it easier to get a different job if you didn't.
Yes, yes, because you diversify inside of it. But people are afraid to take on other work. They're like, I'm not getting paid for that work. Why would I take it on? It's like, well, do you want to give more? You have to show more value before you can get paid for it. That's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, like even in the straight design world, people hire you for what you do, I always tell people.
The quality of your work.
Or even the type of work you do. Like you do web, you do print, you do illustration. Like they look at all of that. But if you don't show the work, they'll never hire you. No one will hire you to be an illustrator if you're not showing illustrations.
Right. So what about you? How does that work for you? Like how have you done that?
We do like a lot of self-promotions and stuff for the company that we send out. And a lot of it is because we'd like to do certain types of designs, and no one's going to pay us to do them if we don't just start doing them.
You have to do it in order to see people. Oh, that's what you're saying. You don't wait to get paid to do what you want. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because and you have to start showing that you can do those things before anyone's going to hire you.
Yeah.
Every now and then a client's like, hey, we got this new idea. Can you do it? And you say yes. But they're the ones coming up with that idea. Like
you want to do something more than what someone's assigning you to do, and you're like, I wish I were doing more of this work, you have to start doing that work, like you just said.
And then also, like even what we show on our website and what we show when we show clients, you don't show everything you've done. Like other than like when you're fresh out of school, you show everything you've done because
you
like
only show what matters to them.
It's like 10 pieces, you know, right. So you may show everything. But yeah, once you get to a certain point, you're like, you don't have, just because you do the work and you get paid for that type of work, you don't have to show it. So we only show the stuff that we want to do and that we would, you know, that we really want to do in the future. Not that we won't do other work as well, but we, you know, you're very selective on what you throw out there.
What you show and when.
Yeah.
But you know what the reason why I think people don't do this as much as they should is that, and this is my favorite, there's a lot of reasons. Envy,
well, one is
fear,
it's a lot of time.
Whatever. Well, it's time, but yes, time to put in doing stuff you're not getting paid for. But in terms of branding yourself, people think it's douchey. I think people are afraid of looking like they're trying to be all like, ugh. And that thing I don't like either. Well, they're trying to be like, hey, I'm like special. Like no one wants to call attention to themselves in the ranks of a job. It's one thing, it's your company.
Oh, that's why I use my company name though too.
Right. But what about what about people who are in a job and they want to brand themselves in a way they're afraid of standing out and having people look at them with disdain? I think that's a big fear.
Yeah, you got to kind of, but if you want to do that work, you have to kind of get over it.
But you don't have to be a douche about it. You can be supportive and be a solution for other people.
Unless you want to do douchey work.
There's a space for that.
Yeah. Right. If you're like, hey, you know, this is the type of work I love, I want to look like a tool, go for it.
Well, maybe, sure.
Yeah, just know that you're going to do work of a tool.
Know that you're a tool. Yeah. Own it.
Yeah. That can be your brand.
That can be. I don't know that too many people are competing with that.
All right, I got something to look forward to now. All right, we're going to be right back with Terry. Thanks. So I have to ask, did you ever meet Martha Stewart?
I knew her.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. I was on her show a lot. Like, yeah, we knew each other.
Well, you had me on the Martha Stewart show, the whole works?
Okay. Oh, I was on the show once a month. She was very respectful of her editors, and she treated me great. So I have no complaints. She yelled at me once, that was it.
Okay, but you know, I mean, she
because we messed up once.
Well,
hey, she's tough, but I admire her.
I mean, you have to be. She's running a corporation. Like she's running a huge.
She's also a huge celebrity. Like, yeah. It's not just running it, right? I mean, she has people also running the organization. But she was just when she was in the room, you just couldn't take your eyes off her. She was like a force, and she's super tall. She was just like this big presence.
Does she also wear like 8-inch heels? Do you
want
to be taller? Oh,
yes.
Really? Okay.
Yep, she would wear her Louboutins. She was like 6'3" in shoes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's intimidating, for sure.
Okay.
But, you know, she was always good to me. Nothing but good things. She really kind of gave my stock a little push because I was associated with her company, it really was helpful to me.
And I'm sure people are like, Martha Stewart didn't yell at Terry. She must know what's going on.
She did yell at me.
She didn't yell at her today. She yelled at everyone else today. So.
No, I have warm feelings for her. But I don't miss being at a job full time, I got to be honest. I don't miss it.
Yeah, so where are you at now? What's your website? Can people look
up? Oh, yeah, sure.
Hidden stuff? Is it all like CIA?
Yeah, it's not at all. It's Terry Trespecio. I mean, just try to spell it, and Google's like, you mean this chick? The last name is T as in Tom, R-E-S, P-I-C-I-O.
And it's T-E-R-R-I, too.
Yes, terrychespichaud.com. I am hired out as a speaker, a consultant, or whatever. Here's basically the gist of what I do, just to explain it in really simple terms. I help individuals and companies figure out what the heck they're trying to say and how to say it across platform. In words, podcast, TED Talk, whatever it is you're trying to communicate, I can help you put it into words and language that help build your brand.
Okay.
That's it.
So give me an example of how you can help somebody.
Say you can't think of a name for your company. Say you have your company and your name, but you don't know what, like, your message isn't clear. You're not standing out against the competition. You don't know what you're trying to say. You don't have any strategy for your content. I actually help develop and produce content. I work with designers, and I'm a writer, and I also work with writers to really land the messaging for someone. A lot of times people's websites are just terrible through no fault of their own. No one taught them what to say on their website. But I say, tell me what you're trying to do, and let's work on it, and I will create the language every time. I've never not been able to do it, and I love doing it. It's my favorite problem to solve.
Okay. So it's not the visual part, but it's the how to sell the visual.
It is the visual too, because I work with a designer. I say, here's what it should feel like. I work with and collaborate with design to create websites, collateral, all of it. So I kind of creative direct the projects, whatever they are.
And what's your ideal client? Like when someone comes to you, is it large companies, is it small companies?
Honestly, the ideal client isn't necessarily a size. Obviously, this is an investment. So someone who says, hey, I want to do it, but I don't have any money to invest in it, that doesn't work for me because I can't do that.
Right.
But individuals who are looking to scale their brands, who want some rapid fire and media coaching and branding around what they do, I'll tell you this, an ideal client for me is someone who is an author, expert, or visionary or business owner who's looking to scale their brand in the media, because this fall I'm launching an online course called Lights, Camera, Expert with a colleague of mine who's a news producer. And Lights, Camera, Expert teach you how to scale your brand in the media. So that's one thing. Everything you need to know, how the media works, how to get attention, how to shape your brand and your messaging, fine. But individually, I love when companies say, let's work together. We're trying to get this thing across. What's our key messaging? How do we say it? What should the website look like? Blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
So that's fun, I think.
Sure. No, I understand. So I've got this company where I'm trying to do work of a tool. So how do I message this? How can you help me?
Well, what I always say is, what are you trying to do? What do you think someone wants from you? What problem are you fixing? Do you want to use you as an example, a real example?
Can we
do you as an example?
Sure.
All right. So in one of your many jobs, because you have lots of different things that you specialize in, you do content creation, but you also do design.
We mostly do design, and it's mostly web. I mean, we do branding. We normally brand for smaller businesses, and then we'll do their print and their web.
So who comes up with the message? Like when you're going to design something, the company says, can you design our website? It's hard for you to do that without knowing what they're trying to do. Who comes up with that?
We actually normally talk to a writer. We have a couple of writers we work with. And actually most of our work, which we don't really show, is working for companies that already have like a marketing team. And so they actually have
them.
A messaging. But we don't really advertise that part because...
Why not?
Because that either comes to us or it doesn't. Like, that's not really...
Is that worth it for your time? Because I think that's very valuable, that you would pair with an in-house department and help them do what they do better. You will make them look good.
Yeah.
There's money in that. There's budget for making people look good.
But half of that stuff we can't show. Because it's either... If it's for another agency, it's their work, so we can't show it.
It's not public?
Well, it's through... We're doing work for someone else's company.
Oh, so that's kind of stuff you can't show.
Or there's some other places where... It's the in-house thing, and they're like, no, it's proprietary.
Okay, so you can't be showing that around town.
Yeah.
But then how do you find new clients? How
word
do you?
Word of mouth, mostly.
So you're waiting for it to come to you, which is
on
what
a, on
great.
On a lot of it, but we also, you know, we do okay on the search engine thing and stuff.
But is there any other thing, like, just curious how other people run their businesses? Is it the kind of thing where you're sending out, are you doing thought leadership stuff about design, about, like, reaching out to the customers you've had to have them refer you? And sharing posts and articles that you've written about what you're expert in?
Probably not as much as we should.
Well, who has time, right?
And sadly, when I blog and stuff, it's really to the design community. It's not really to potential
clients. Okay, but that's, you have two different crowds. You have people who are your design people who look to you to be a thought leader for them. And then there's the people who you're trying to serve who are going to pay you.
Yeah.
So that's fine. That's just that you have two different groups.
Right.
It's more fun to talk to the designers because they're in your
wheelhouse. This podcast isn't. I mean,
exactly.
No one's listening to this and be like, hey, I should hire this guy. Because that's not, you know, we're just doing this because it's fun and
right.
It's educational. And
yeah, but it's not just fun. You're helping people see their businesses
right.
In a new way.
Yeah, we just don't make any money on it.
I know. That's the problem, isn't it? And giving your time to the things that don't make money.
But the other part is then they have complete control. So I've thought about, you know, it's like once it's monetized, then it becomes a job, and then I don't know if I even want to do it.
Then you might not like it.
Yeah.
So you're not, what I'm getting is you're not someone who's motivated by money. You really like to run your own show.
To a point, I need to.
You need money. We all need it. But you're not giving all your time marketing to the people who bought from you before. You like to be, you're a thought leader in the design community. You've been doing this podcast for 10 years.
Yeah, over and out. Well, it was another podcast before, but.
Doesn't matter. It's you, Donovan, who is the expert. What do you think about your position as a thought leader in design? Do you have one opinion about the design world that you think most people get wrong?
No, I don't think so.
Like you look at people's design and you go, oh, we need to fix this. Like something that gets under your
craw. No, that shifts. I mean, any the only things where I've seen like, I'm like, those are trends and they just kind of work themselves out anyway.
But I'm talking about decisions people make that you think they make wrong.
Oh, I'm sure. I just never think of it that way.
I know. You can't think of it on the spot.
It's hard because you're in this profession, and I think anyone that gets in the design profession, one of the hardest things is you start learning more and more, and you get more opinionated. Everything you look at, you naturally just don't like.
I know. That is the rub
I've talked about becoming an expert.
You end up not liking more stuff.
Go shopping with the wife, and she's like, what do you think of this? What do you think of this? It's like, you don't like anything. It's like,
why?
Just because you start getting, you know, like, oh, the typeface is wrong on those greeting cards. Oh, this wrapping paper, the color's off. Oh, look at this.
So wait, this is really interesting what you're saying. Are you saying that there's a downside to becoming an expert or thought leader because your increasing and sharpening discernment and knowledge will make you less tolerant of other people's stuff?
In a way.
That's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because then you can't be good at what you do and like anything anyone else does. That's hard.
Well, you can like some things, but like all the stuff that before you didn't even think about. You just don't like. So, like, we had Sagmeister on the show a couple years ago. Being him has to be hard. He was sitting there Stefan Sagmeister. He was sitting there just getting uncomfortable in the room because the color of the carpet was off with the color of the walls.
That's oversensitive.
And he started, he was like next level where he was like visibly just starting to get upset. Like, I could see him and he was like visibly just.
Because he's an artist, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's
but that's what I'm saying. The artist sensitivity is like, I can't even tolerate if the curtain doesn't match the drapes, right?
Yeah, and he was just and so we ended up talking about like rooms and like conference halls and stuff like that. And he ended up doing talks about it because he just hates.
Isn't that so interesting? Do you think that anyone else cares though? Because his
interviewed some other huge name designers in this room. Not a single one of them mentioned it. And he's even like, the outlet cover is on crooked. Like, I can't even look down.
Mm-hmm. It bothered him that much.
Yeah.
That turns us all into curmudgeons, doesn't it? It's like me with typos and stuff. If I see a typo on a menu, I'm like, whoa, that's not how you spell chamomile.
You know.
It makes me mad.
They put two commas in a row.
I know.
They're going to mess up my order. I obviously can't order a steak here. They won't cook it right.
Well, I will still order. But it's like, you become a perfectionist. Do you consider yourself a perfectionist?
No, I don't. Not. I don't think of it that way, but in a way, you probably. I think if you're in this profession long enough, you probably are, even if you don't think you are.
Hmm. Interesting. I'm still hung up on this idea that the more we know, the less tolerant we'll be. I hope that isn't the case. I like to think we become better intuitive judges of stuff more quickly. It might look like intolerance, but what we're doing is making quicker judgments based on our experience. You know good design when you see it. You do.
You would hope so.
Well, I would hope so.
All right, we're going to be right back with Terry. Thanks. So you're also saying that, do you help people when clients come to them and tell them how to do things, or?
Well, here's the problem with clients. It's just that they're paying you, and they know best, but they're paying you because they want your expertise. But what happens when what you think they should do, they don't do? You're like, oh, I don't want my name on this if they don't do what I say. But at the same time, it's their decision. So it's always this rub.
There is this trick, too, where I always tell the clients that I hope that they understand their business better than we do. I don't think that...
You don't try to know it better.
I believe that as a design, you know, you should start to understand what your clients do. And you should understand the industry they're in. But if you know it better than they do, that's not necessarily good for them. Like they should be an expert in that too. So you have to, I think there is some sort of, you have to listen to your client, at least listen to their rationale when they start pitching things. But there is a point where
you don't want to put down all their ideas.
Right. I would hope a good client has some ideas that are good.
Yes, but is your job to pat their ideas on the back or replace them because you don't want to offend?
I mean, if they are hiring you for it, it there's I think James Victoria, he has his statement was something like there's two types of jobs. There's God jobs and there's jobs or something. And basically, like, you should go at every project like it's going to be the greatest thing you work on and stuff. But there is a point where it becomes just a job for money and you have to just get it out the door. And then I believe he takes his name off of certain pieces.
Right. Well, that's another thing, too. I will mention that a client of mine who often will ask me for advice, what do you think's better, now that they're growing and they brought more resources in-house, they're becoming more of a company, they're not really a startup anymore. And it doesn't behoove me to put down what they're doing. So I started to just like, I advise people to like take your hand off the wheel a little bit, because what do they really value you for? If you become a thorn in their side, reminding them about why they can't do it because you know better, you're trying to do that because you want to make them dependent on you, but that's not in your best interest. You don't want them to be like, oh, out with this thorn. You want to still be supportive. So I've said, I'm not going to try to drive this thing all the time.
But you're also hired as an expert. So there is that.
My advice when I say take it or leave it.
Okay. Because I always say, like, when you're working for yourself, there's three parts of if you're going to be successful or not. And it's like, one is, can you run a business? You know, can you actually like pay things on time, you know, keep things under control, manage hours? Two is, what's your talent level? And then three is, do people actually just want to work with you? Like, do they get along with you? And I think those are almost all like three equal parts. And,
yes.
And I've seen people do well in business that are bad at one, but they're always at least okay with two of them. So
yeah, you don't have to be perfect on all of them, but.
No. And so there is that, but a big chunk is, do they want to work with you? And
if you make them wrong all the time, it's hard to make them want to work with you. Who wants to be reminded that they're wrong or off about their own business? No one wants to feel like that.
Right. So you just, do you tell them like take it or leave it, or do you?
I did that once. I said, I mean, it's your company, so you do what you want. And that was not the best response, because they're like, yeah, no, we want you to be involved. They're like, we want you to care. And I was like, I do care, but I don't want to push this with you. I want you to do what you're comfortable with. Here's what I advise, but whatever you do, I will support and make sure it's done well. That's my new answer.
Okay, I think there are certain jobs where they come through and they're production jobs, and everyone knows what those are, where it's like, oh, you have a product sheet, you want three more like it, I'm not going to question it.
Right.
But when they ask for expertise, I always, my current thought is, I will explain to them why they should do something or why I'm proposing something. But if they want to tell me otherwise, if I feel really good about it, I will maybe try to explain it differently, but I won't push it more than
that. You won't push. Because what are you trying to do? It's like they say about relationships. Do you want to be right, or do you want to be in a relationship? Same thing with your clients. You don't have to be right all the time. And sometimes I'm like, no, but I'm right about this.
Because you
can be wrong.
Yeah, you do this job long enough, and all of a sudden, sometimes they take your advice and it doesn't work. I mean,
right?
It's not going to work 100% of the time.
No. There's no one who's like totally omniscient about this stuff.
Yeah, and sometimes they don't take your advice, and they're like, oh, we should have taken that. You're like,
that's
well,
a good position to be in.
Yeah. Right.
Because you want another chance. You don't want them to be like, you're so annoying to work with. Which would be the worst.
But I guess that you look at it the other way, and if you're asking someone for their advice, do you take 100% of it? Is there anyone you've listened to where you've taken 100% of what they've told you to do?
85, 90.
Okay.
Right.
And then you get yelled at by Martha Stewart.
Right.
So I get it.
Totally. Yes. Yes, that is correct. Yeah. I think it's a really delicate balance, though, because you want them to want you. You want them to hire you back. If it's not a full-time job and someone's paying you monthly and they could decide at any time they don't want to deal with you anymore, you have to make them feel good about the choices they make. That's part of your job.
Well, you are, even though they're hiring you as an individual, you become part of their team.
And you want to keep that. You want them to think that. You don't want to feel like, well, I'm an outsider. It doesn't matter. That's why the word consultant isn't the best either. You want them to think you're part of their team.
So what's a better word than consultant?
It's so hard. I think if it is a...
Or is this one that changes?
It changes. Honestly, I think it's like...
overused and then...
Yeah, consultant just sounds so disconnected from the rest of the operation. I just say, oh, well, I'm like, I'm on this team. I think the idea of being on the team for this project, because it is project-based. So I don't want anyone to feel that I'm other too much. You don't want the organ... You don't want the body to reject the organ transplant. You know what
okay,
I mean? You're a
right.
transplant. So I put enough of their own DNA back in so they don't reject. That's part of the game.
Well, and that would make sense anyway. Anytime you're doing design for another company, it should come across as them as
right.
well.
Right. Well, with words, if no one in the company can write and you're doing their words, it still has to sound like they wish they sounded. That's the key on my end with writing, because they don't sound like that. I made them sound like that on purpose.
Yeah, I think my first job, I realized something was right, and it was like, oh, all of these press releases from CEOs, they don't write those.
Yeah, right.
They write the draft.
This one woman is writing everything.
Yeah, they write a draft, and the draft might have the...
They don't even do that. They tell you.
Oh, yeah.
They'll tell me over the phone, here's what I want to say, and then you write it.
So they'll give you most of the content, but then...
Mm, it depends.
Okay.
But the whole thing is, yes, you want to make it sound like them. It's always about them. If you're looking for your jobs when you are a consultant or freelancer, however you want to describe it, don't try to make them scratch your own need in terms of creative fulfillment. Do what they need first, you know?
Yeah, and then do side projects or your own work
exactly.
to fill the other part.
Exactly.
And every now and then, and I'm not saying every now and then, though, you'll hit a client. The best clients are the ones where they come to you and you start looking at what they want, and you're like, you know what? We're the target market, and they basically want what we just do naturally. Those are the jobs where you're like, oh, then you can just make it do whatever. Like, that can be your project.
Want some freedom.
If it fits. But not all projects fit 100%.
No. That's all right.
Yeah.
You learn as you go. That's why I like having lots of clients at the same time. It's like speeds up your learning curve.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And hopefully enough of them pay that you can keep doing it.
Yes, enough of them should pay. Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
All right. Well, Terry, thank you so much for being on the show. It's terrytrespecio.com. And you say you just start typing it in Google. Correctly.
Yeah, Google and I, yeah, we know each other now. He knows.
Okay.
Or she knows.
Or it's on our post at 36point.com. I'll have a link there as well.
Great.
Great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
The Reflex Blue Show with Donovan Beery is hosted at 36point.com. Music by Dustlab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.